And we've been having a great time in 1 Peter. I hope you've been enjoying this series. Man, it's been so good, this idea of living hopefully. Man, that's a challenge these days, isn't it? We look around us and there's so much to discourage us and to bring us down and so much bad news. How can we live hopefully? And man, we kind of been hammered the last few weeks. I mean, it started with Pastor Matthew and talking about submission, and then Pastor Paul with husbands and wives needing to submit to each other. And man, what does this look like, this idea of submitting one to another? And it keeps getting repeated and keeps getting repeated and keeps getting repeated. And I'm wondering, do we need to start listening? Right. It reminds me of the young pastor who went to a new church and he was pretty excited and he preached this first message and the elders were like, man, that was a great message. Oh man, we're so excited that he's here. And the next week he came back and he preached the same message. The elders were like, that's interesting. We'll give him a little more time. Third week he preached the same message. Finally the elders were like, we probably ought to go talk to this guy. One of the elders went up and talked to him and said, man, that's a great message, man. We really appreciate that. When are you going to preach another one? He said, when you start applying this one, we'll move on to the next one. Oops. Pastor Paul had a great phrase a couple weeks ago. He said, submission is a decision to surrender to an agenda bigger than our own and to follow an example whose love keeps transforming the world. Man, I love that definition. Submission and love. Submission and love. Submission and love. As I submit in love, love is demonstrated. Love transforms the world. And the passage we're going to look at today starts to put a little bit more hands and feet into what that submission and love looks like. So we're going to be in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 to 12. And this is what Peter writes, beginning in verse 8. Finally, all of you should be of one mind. Sympathize with each other. Love each other as brothers and sisters. Be tender-hearted and keep humble. Don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. That is what God has called you to do, and He will grant you His blessing. For the Scriptures say, if you want to enjoy life and see many happy days, keep your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from telling lies. Turn away from evil and do good. Search for peace and work to maintain it. The eyes of the Lord watch over those who do right, and His ears are open to their prayers. But the Lord turns His face against those who do evil. So he starts right off the bat here, summing things up. He says, finally, or to sum up, all this stuff we've been talking about, this idea of submission and relationships, if we were to sum all that up, this is how I'd sum it up. Love one another. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? I think Jesus had something like that to say at one point. If I was to sum up all the law and all the prophets, it would be this. Love God and love others. And Peter continues on with that theme. And the context for verse 8 here is he's talking about this love for one another, love one another. It's targeted at those who are believers, at other Christ followers. We're to love one another. And he gives some really practical feet to what that love looks like. He starts by saying, you need to be of one mind. You need to have a unity. And unity does not mean uniformity. We're not supposed to create little robots who all look and think and operate the same. But we can have a unity of heart and mind. Cooperation in the midst of diversity. South Hills Church is made up of people from various backgrounds, various ages, various skill sets, various personalities, various opinions. If I was to ask this morning about any kind of particular topic within the church or how we should act or behave, I'm going to get a diversity of opinion. We have a diversity of opinion about how we do ministry, but we should have a unity in what our mission is about. How we go about that mission, the methods we implement, they can be very different. But Christ followers, even though we differ on how things are done, we must agree on what must be done and why. The mission of South Hills Church, the mission of South Hills Church is to make disciples. That's what we're on about here. The mission of South Hills Church is life transformation. That's why we sent 75 kids to spiritual retreat last weekend. That's why we're sending 9 guys to Montana this week. That's why we're doing a hygiene drive next week. That's why we do life groups. That's why everything we do in this church, it's about life transformation. We want to see people take the next step in their journey with Christ, whether that is not knowing anything about Jesus and beginning to learn about him and, Lord willing, coming to salvation, or those who've been walking with Jesus for years taking the next step in that journey of becoming Christ-like. Hear me clearly. Our mission is not to transform Washington, D.C. I believe that if we're doing what we should be doing as believers, we're going to transform our society, which will eventually trickle up, not trickle down. Our mission as a church isn't just to reopen the building so people can come in here. Our mission as a church isn't even to fill this building on a Sunday morning. Our mission is life transformation. Transforming the lives of people who are sitting in the pew or sitting in a couch. We want to see your life transformed. We want to see your life transformed. We want to see the people in the community's life transformed. And as a church, we have to come together in unity if we're going to see that happen. We all have to believe that it's about life transformation, first and foremost. Yeah, we can discuss different methods, but it's about Jesus. And it's about him transforming people's lives. And he can, you're right. And he will. And part of that unity is also understanding, I can talk about the different methods, and we can have some good discussion about the different methods, but I don't have to have my own way. No, really? No, I want it my way. No, sometimes I have to yield my way because I believe so much in his glory and in his power and in him transforming people's lives that I'm willing for it to be done your way. Don't marry yourself to the method. Marry yourself to the mission. And work together in unity. Demonstrate love and unity as a body. Peter says, finally, you should be of one mind. Sympathize with each other. Sympathize with each other. I haven't seen a lot of that over the last year, quite frankly. Because we all have our thoughts about COVID and masks and reopening and this and that and the other. And we don't always have a great level of sympathy for those who have a different perspective. In fact, some people who are sitting here this morning may even have a judgmental spirit for those who are sitting at home. Why aren't they here? They're just afraid. They don't care. They're not part of this church. Now sympathize with them. They have genuine concerns. And they love Jesus just as much as you do who are sitting here. And they watch. Matter of fact, they attend life group. They tithe. They've been dropping stuff off for Christmas store and for UGM. This is their church. They're seeking to influence and impact the way that they can. Sympathize with them. Share both their joys and their sorrows. Hear their concerns. And my friends at home, sympathy goes both ways. Sympathize with each other. Love each other as brothers and sisters. Love each other. Look around the room. These are your brothers and sisters. Love them. even if you don't agree with them. It doesn't say you have to agree with your brothers and sisters. It says love your brothers and sisters. Be tender-hearted. The meaning of this word is to be caring and compassionate. Not just in our actions, but even in our emotions. I don't know about you, I hear so much bad news. I hear so many difficult stories that sometimes when another one comes in, it's hard for me to really empathize with that. I'm so deluged with bad news. And yet I need to have that same caring compassion for your bad news, for your difficulty, for your story. We need to do that for each other. That's sometimes why it's good not to listen to so much news, right? So that I can be tender-hearted and compassionate towards my brothers and sisters. And keep a humble attitude. Keep a humble attitude. General mental outlook just needs to have that humility. You know what humility does? Humility says that other people are more important than myself. Other people's perspectives are more important than myself. Other people's ideas. And humility is often contrasted with pride. Proverbs 29:23 says, pride ends in humiliation while humility brings honor. How about you? But as I look at the future of South Hills Church and this transition we're in, and we're looking forward expectantly to the next lead pastor God's going to bring to this body, I believe we all want to see God's blessings in this church. Would you agree? We're looking for God to bless this church, to use this church, to multiply the ministries of this church for life transformation. But have the way we've interacted and treated each other within the walls of this church hindered God's blessing? Is there business we need to take care of before God's going to bring in the next lead pastor? Are there relationships we need to heal? Are there people we have not been treating with love and care and concern? Are there people that we've been disagreeing with and then we've let that harbor and become bitterness and resentment because we don't see eye to eye? Have we not been caring and compassionate, not been sympathetic, not been humble, been demanding our own way? And if we have, we need to confess that. And if we don't confess that, we don't ask God to forgive and transform our lives, we're not going to see his hand of blessing on this church moving forward. So this is a gut check for all of us, myself included. What's my attitude been to others? And the reality is, in this day and age in which we live, when our attitude is out of whack, when we're not dealing with people in love and compassion and concern, it most likely and most often is reflected with our mouth. And sometimes it might be verbal, sometimes it might be behind a keyboard, but it's our tongue. James has some excellent imagery and advice when it comes to this. James chapter 3, verses 9 to 11, he's talking about the tongue. And he says, sometimes it, our tongue, praises the Lord and Father, and sometimes it curses those who've been made in the image of God. And so blessing and cursing come pouring out of the same mouth. So wait a minute, I'm standing here on Sunday morning praising God for the goodness of God and how his goodness is chasing after me and how amazing he is, and then I go head out and I go gossip about somebody in the lobby, or I get in, start butting heads with people, and I don't treat them with love. I start cursing them, and they've been made in God's image. Surely, my brothers and sisters, again, Christ followers, believers, this is not right. Does a spring of water bubble out with both fresh water and bitter water? Last weekend, we had all that snow, shoveling snow, most of us did, multiple times. You know, you get out there and you're working hard and you're shoveling snow and you're shoveling snow and it's kind of chilly, so you don't realize how thirsty you're really getting. I realize I was dehydrated most of last weekend, but I go inside and I'm thirsty. And what happens if I grab a glass of fresh salt water? Ugh. That's the reaction you get, isn't it? You take a drink of salt water. Huh. But when you're thirsty, you get fresh water. It's refreshing, isn't it? And look at that. They look the same, don't they? On the outside, they both look good. And it's easy for us to show up here on a Sunday morning. We look good. Praise Jesus. Good to see you this morning. But then what comes out of our mouth? When we talk, are people going, ah. Or are people going, ah. As brothers and sisters in Christ, we need to be refreshing each other in love, in unity, tender-hearted, humility, sympathizing with each other. Again, it doesn't mean we all have to agree all the time. But we work together in unity because the mission's more important than the method. And the mission is about Jesus and his glory and life transformation. And you see, the principle that Peter's going to keep bringing out in this passage is that when we bless, we are blessed. When we as a church get this and start blessing each other and living in love and unity and humility with each other, God is going to bless this church and he's going to multiply its ministry and its impact. But if we continue to be divisive and we start making people frown and scowl and divisive, God's not going to bless. When we bless, we are blessed. Starts here within this church, in this body together as brothers and sisters. But then Peter moves it externally in verse 9, and he says, don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Pay them back with a blessing. That is what God has called you to do, and he will grant you his blessing. Now remember, Pastor Matthew told us 3 weeks ago that Peter was writing to the body of believers under the reign of Nero. They did not have an easy life. They did not have people saying, man, that's so awesome, you're a Christian. Woohoo! Like, oh, you're a Christian? Let's light you on fire. They were persecuted. They were abused for the fact that they were Christ followers. And what does Peter say to them? Don't repay evil for evil. Man, that is hard. That's a lesson Peter had to learn. I don't know if you remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night Jesus was betrayed, what did he do? He pulled out his sword and he cut off a guy's ear. They're doing evil, I'm going to do evil. Jesus said, nah. Healed the man's ear. Peter, or Paul, before he became a Christ follower, what did he do? He was arresting Christ followers. But when Christ transformed their lives, they stopped repaying evil for evil. Tell you where I struggle with this one? Driving. And this week some gal cut me off in the roundabout. I was ticked. I had to ask my wife's forgiveness this weekend. We were over in Portland and this guy was like trying to cut me off. I'm like, argh. And if I get that way behind the wheel, how am I going to be online? How am I going to be at work? How am I going to be in my neighborhood? How am I going to be with that neighbor who just grates me and clean up his lawn, has a different political value system? You're going to dump your leaves in my yard? Well, I'm going to dump my leaves in your yard. Right? But that's not what we're called to do, is it? That's not what Christ would do. Don't retaliate with insults when insulted. The term refers to abusive or insulting talk or speaking evil against someone. I love how the Message paraphrases this verse. It says, no sharp tongue sarcasm. Yeah, ooh. That hits home a little bit. The world is watching. They want to see how we respond. So we respond differently because Jesus is inside of us? So we respond differently because we have their eternal destiny in heart and mind? Or do we have their eternal destiny in mind? And we're just too busy worried about today. And look what Peter does in terms of the contrast. He says, don't repay evil for evil. Don't insult when insulted. Rather, bless. Huh? Neighbor dumps all his leaves in my yard and I'm supposed to bless him? Woman cuts me off in the roundabout and I'm supposed to bless her? My coworker goes off on me and I'm supposed to bless them? Yes. And I love what he says. Bless them. That is what God has called you to do. People say, what's my calling? What does God want me to do? He just told you. Your calling is to bless. And not just God bless you when they sneeze. We're to genuinely love and care. But that takes humility, doesn't it? I just heard this quote yesterday at a conference I was at about humility. It's by Pastor Larry Osborne. He said, biblical humility doesn't stop with serving those who don't deserve to be served. It goes one step further. It even serves God's enemies. Biblical humility serves God's enemies. So when your neighbor or your coworker or that person online gives you salt water, you don't give them salt water back. You give them fresh water. So they drink it and they go, wasn't expecting that. Jesus gave us that example multiple times in the Gospels. We'll just pick out Luke 6, 35 and 36, where he says, love your enemies. Love your enemies. Lend to them without expecting to be repaid. Then your reward from heaven will be very great, and you will truly be acting as children of the Most High. For he is kind to those who are unthankful and wicked. Did you catch that? He, Jesus, is kind to those who are thankful, unthankful, and wicked. You must be compassionate just as your Father is compassionate. What an interesting... This is what Jesus does. This is what your Father does. You do the same. Bless those who don't deserve it. Because that's what Jesus did for you and I. We didn't deserve his blessing. We deserve to be forsaken. We deserve to be rejected. We deserve to be forever banished to hell. That's what you and I deserve. But he sought to bless. He sent his son Jesus down to this earth because he loves you, because he knows that there is no way for us to get past our sin and our rejection of him and our rebellion. We can't do it on our own. So out of his great love, he sent his son, Jesus, to live perfect, sinless, holy life. And then to die on a cross. To hang there, taking your sin, your punishment on himself. And while he's hanging there, this is what gets me. While he's hanging there, the people who put him on that cross, he looks down at them and says, Father, forgive them. They know what they've done. Do we model that attitude when people harm us? We say, Father, forgive them. Father, forgive them. Father, bless them. Father, give me the words to be a blessing in return. He blessed you so that you can go and bless others. I wonder how the testimony of the church has been damaged by the way that we've interacted with those who are not Christ followers, with those who have a different political persuasion, those who have a different perspective on issues, those who don't agree with us or grate against us. What is our testimony as a church? I know back in the spring last year, early on in COVID, I was frustrated with what was going on. I was frustrated with some of how things were being handled. I had my own perspective on things. I was looking at some scientific stuff that I had seen, and I actually put something online, and it was there for about 30 minutes, and God convicted me in my heart to take it down. And he convicted me that day that my job isn't to try and convince people of a political persuasion or convince people of a response to a pandemic. My job is to point people to Jesus and bring people together. That's what God has called me to do. And ever since that day back in the spring, I've sought to put a Bible verse on my social media every day. Because it forces me, one, to put my perspective where it needs to be. And that may not be what God's asking you to do. I'm just telling you the journey God's had me on. He's going to take you on your own journey. And he's going to let that come to fruition in a different way. And just like Pastor Paul kind of challenged us last week that sometimes we think about praying. We pray to affect the way that we live. And he was encouraging us to flip that. Maybe the way that we live and interact with others affects our prayers. I've often thought about the fact that God blesses us so that we'll be a blessing to others. I've preached that message. I love Psalm 63 that talks about, you know, God blesses us so that we can bless others. We're blessed to be a blessing. But today I want to flip that. When we bless, we are blessed. We don't have to wait for God's blessing. I mean, we just talked about the fact he's already given it to us. But when we bless others, we are blessed. Peter says that. Don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. That's what God called you to do, and he will grant you his blessing. When we bless, he blesses. Now, let me be very clear about what blessing means. Blessing does not mean getting rich. Blessing does not mean that you're going to be healthy all the time. Blessing does not mean you're not going to have any issues or problems. See, in the New Testament age, blessing was more about spiritual, psychological, and interpersonal blessing than it was material or physical, as often we saw in the Old Testament. We're going to unpack that just a little bit as we keep moving forward. What does blessing look like? But don't focus so much on the blessing yet. Focus on being a blessing. It's the first 2 points. We're all about you being a blessing. Love one another within the body. Love your enemies. Be that fresh water. And then you will see God's blessing. So love one another, love your enemies, and the third point is to love life. Peter moves on in verses 10 to 12 to quote Psalm 34, verses 12 to 16. And I love it. I mean, here's Peter. Just so you guys know, why do preachers always have a 3-point sermon? Well, it started way back with Peter because verses 8 and 9 are Peter's 3-point sermon about Psalm 34, 12 to 16. So he says, do love one another in verse 8. That was Peter's first point. Do love one another. Well, that goes to keep your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from telling lies. So he's unpacking this Old Testament passage. He's going to preach a sermon to you. Do love one another. Do not repay evil for evil. He said in verse 9, well, that's just there in verse 14, turn away from evil and do good. So, you know, he's unpacking that passage. And then do bless others, he said in verse 9. Well, again, that's verse 14. Search for peace and work to maintain it. Peter's got his own three-point sermon about loving others, loving your enemies, and loving life. Because when we bless, we are blessed. But in your life groups this week, you're going to dig a little deeper into that Psalm 34 passage. And it's important for us to understand. See, Peter starts with verse 10 in our passage. If you want to enjoy life and see many happy days, go and do these things. And it's easy for us to say, okay, well, I want to enjoy life. I want happy days. Fonzie and whatnot. No, different happy days, sorry. What does that happy days or that blessings mean? They're not necessarily problem-free because the psalmist wrote about fears in verse 4, in Psalm 34, 4. He wrote about troubles in 34, 6, and 17. He wrote about afflictions in verse 34, 19. And even a broken heart in Psalm 34, 18. The psalmist is talking about all these difficulties and these challenges and these negative things. See, a good day for the believer who loves life is not one in which he's pampered and sheltered, but one in which he experiences God's help and blessing because of life's problems and trials. A blessing isn't that you're sheltered and pampered. It's experiencing the goodness of God amidst the difficulties of life. In the midst of the challenges in your life, what blessings from God can you recount? Many of you know that we had a challenging beginning of the year in our family. My wife had major back surgery in December. She was on the healing mend from that. We went away with our daughter and son-in-law for Christmas. And my mom has advanced Alzheimer's. And December 26th, my dad contracted COVID. He landed in the hospital on January 2nd with pneumonia from COVID. Because of my mom's advanced Alzheimer's, she can't be by herself. So we came back from vacation, and I headed straight out there by myself, because Mel's still in healing and couldn't be exposed to COVID. It was difficult days. I didn't realize how bad my mom had gotten. My dad was in the hospital. I was out there by myself, felt alone, unsure of what the future was going to hold. And yet over and over again, I saw God's blessing. Sometimes very physical material ways with people dropping meals by. Someone from the Tri-Cities drove out, put themselves in a COVID situation to put a Ring alarm system in the house so that I was more comfortable with what was going on with my mom. But you know what else God's blessing looked like? It was a walking path along the berm of the river there in Dayton that I could go walk along every day and just clear my mind and be in the presence of God. His blessing looked like Melanie finding a playlist. Get the title of the playlist, Hold Hope. Man, that was on repeat for 2 or 3 weeks. God's blessings, sometimes they're very real and practical things, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes it's just his presence. It's just his hope. It's just his encouragement. It's just the believer loving each other. No matter what difficulties you're going through today, and as I look across this crowd, I know some of you and the pain that you're experiencing and the uncertainty that you're experiencing, and I want to encourage you to look for the blessing of God in the midst of it, because his blessing isn't a pampered, trouble-free life. His blessing is his presence in the midst of the difficulties in your life. Love life. And as you love life and you see his blessing in your life, it's going to help you, it's going to enable you all the more to bless your brothers and sisters in the body. And it's going to enable you all the more to bless and love your enemy. Because when we bless, we are blessed. As we start to wrap up, some thoughts I want to leave with you, some questions for each of us to ask ourselves, and I had to ask myself these questions. And the first one is, the biggest blessing God offers us is forgiveness for our sins. Have you received the blessing of new life in Jesus. If you have never received that blessing, that's the first blessing he wants to give you. And I want to tell you, it's available to you today. And your life will truly be blessed today if you surrender to him and you say, Jesus, please forgive my sin and come into my life. I acknowledge that you died and rose again for me, and I want you in my life. And he will. He'll come in, and you'll experience the best blessing you could have in your life. If you are a Christ follower, how can you live in unity with other brothers and sisters? Maybe the question is, are there relationships right here in this church that you need to restore? Maybe you've had a negative attitude towards somebody. You've held a grudge or bitterness against somebody. You haven't been treating people with love and unity. And when people have been hearing you, it's been bitter. I want to encourage you today, don't delay it. Go and restore that relationship. Start being fresh water to the people right here in this body. Maybe for you, it has to do with those outside. Maybe it's your neighbor, it's your coworker, it's an unsaved family member, and you need to love your enemy. What is one way you can bless someone who doesn't know Jesus this week? I want you to think through your sphere. Don't expect that they're going to hear about Jesus here in this building. They're going to hear and see about Jesus through you as you are fresh water and you bless them. And as you bless, you will be blessed. And then finally, I know that for some of you, this it's just a struggle. The fact that you're even here or you're watching online this morning, man, that's a victory in and of itself. And so I want to challenge you. Write down God's blessings in your life, even if you're going through a challenging time. How can you see God's blessing right within your life? We're going to move into another time of musical worship, and we're going to start with the song, The Blessing. Seems a little appropriate for the message we just heard. And as we sing it, I want you to envision people, as you're singing about seeing God's blessing to your children and your their children and their children, who are the people that God is asking you to bless them so that their children and their children and their children will experience God's blessing? We're going to have our prayer team up front as we do this. And maybe you just need to pray. Maybe you want God's help. You need God's strength to be a blessing to people in the church or to be a blessing to your enemies. Or to just see God's blessing in your life. And we want to pray with you. If you've never received the blessing of God's gift of salvation, come. We'd love to pray with you. But stand and sing with us this song, The Blessing. And as we head into that, I just want to read this passage from the Message kind of as a benediction. Summing up, be agreeable, be sympathetic, be loving, be compassionate, be humble. That goes for all of you. No exceptions. No retaliation. No sharp tongue sarcasm. Instead, bless. That's your job. To bless. You'll be a blessing and also get a blessing.